Hello family, it's Misting Ashley. I wanted to do a little intro video to let you know what this video is all about. As you can see, I'm sitting out on the front porch in this beautiful day in June, getting a little breeze, hearing the boats in the background, pretty awesome. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know what this video is. Basically, I'm digging deep to present you guys my part two AI video, but as I am doing a few interviews with some experts to help back up my claims. And this is an interview that I wanted to share with you in full. The changes that we see in the world are all headed in one direction, and that is actually of a technocracy. Now, in this video, we're going to discuss what a technocracy is, how it goes along with the plans of AI that we're all seeing unfold before us, and we will also show you where they freely admit to these plans in their own works, in the predictive programming, and in lies all around us, hidden in plain sight. So we get a little heady here. I'm sure you'll appreciate it though, because it can help you save time in your deeper research so that you may continue to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. I love you, family. I thank you for your support, those of you who have taken the time to do so. May peace be with you all, and may the truth set you free. Well, hello family. Today I have a very special guest to help us with some historical insight that will help us understand why the world is in the shape that it's in. Jay Dyer is with us today. Jay is the host of Jay's Analysis Podcast in Esoteric Hollywood. He is an academically published author of peer-reviewed works. He has appeared on numerous nationally syndicated radio shows such as Ground Zero and Coast to Coast AM. He is the author of Esoteric Hollywood, Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film. Jay's specialties include not only theology and geopolitics, but also metaphysics, film analysis, literature, authentic history, and more. Thank you so much, Jay, for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you, Dane. I'm glad to be here. It's a pleasure. I'm always honored when people ask me on their channel. So I look forward to talking about technocracy. It's definitely something that I've put a lot of time into.
Oh, fantastic. Well, these subjects are so huge, and the truth right. of our history has been so altered and hidden from us. And very few people have the bandwidth, honestly, to do such a deep study to get to the bottom of things, which is what it really takes to comprehend how deep these agendas of control really go, which is why people like you, who have already spent so many years reading their own works and staying afloat of what they're doing, is so very valuable. Very few of us are able to do that. We're dealing with what the beast is keeping us all busy, you know, keeping our heads afloat. So thanks right. for all your work and the good that you do for us all. But regarding the importance of, you know, the elites and their own works, in my own journey, it was by reading Zbigniew Brzezinski's work, Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technocratic Era, that it became apparent to me that certain elites are almost shameless in admitting, you know, their plans for controlling the planet. And on one hand, for that, I am very grateful. But it was his work in the 70s. It was already explaining in such great detail how this control through technocracy will turn out. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the internet, about how people will voluntarily give their most private information, which is evident in the likes of Facebook. Here's my, you know, creme brulee I had for dinner. And much more. So just to back it up, most aren't even familiar with the word technocracy. So while we see the effects of it, we don't know how it came about. So if you wouldn't mind, please explain to us the definition of technocracy and a little bit about its beginnings and how it got a reboot with Mr. Zbig.
Yeah, this was actually, it's an idea that goes back to the ancient Greeks. The idea of both cybernetics and technocracy arise from Plato. And this is mentioned in his writings. He conceives of the idea of techne, or the idea of control through technology. Now, he doesn't believe in like computers per se, but he believes in the idea of mechanization. So this has been in ancient texts for a long time, but we have to come up to the period of the Enlightenment and the French Revolution. And you had writers like Henri Saint-Simon, who was a guy who influenced Auguste Comte, and they actually invented sociology. So sociology actually comes out of a bunch of guys who also believed in the idea of technocracy, that you could basically create a completely controlled managerial society. So bound up with the idea of technocracy is the idea of controlling everyone through mechanization in some way, or coming up with a perfectly mathematical formula for how to run government and everyone else's lives in a very intrusive sense. So in the 30s, a guy picked up this idea who was an engineer named Howard Scott, and he kind of started what would become the modern technocracy movement. And then it became more popular once again, I think particularly through the science fiction writings of people like H.G. Wells, certain thinkers like Bertrand Russell, who's a very important globalist strategist from about 100 years ago, a famous logician. Then when we come to the more modern period, we have, like you said, Brzezinski. Brzezinski was spotted by David Rockefeller as a potential technocrat, a potential person to be of influence. And he went to McGill University, which is interesting because McGill is one of the central universities for MKUltra.
Even in the Cold War years of the late 50s and early 60s, most doctors and academics would have been embarrassed to have found that an organization of spies was openly paying for their research. So the CIA set up a number of fronts, respectable foundations like the Human Ecology Fund. Sounds innocent enough, but it was run by the CIA's brainwashing experts. Here at McGill University in Montreal, the fund found three projects worth financing.
The largest MKUltra research project, this one directly related to brainwashing, was carried out at the university's psychiatric hospital, the Allen Memorial Institute. Located atop Mount Royal in a mansion with the eerie name of Ravenscrag, the Allen Memorial was once the most prestigious mental hospital in Canada. The unorthodox treatments of its director caught the attention of the CIA in the mid-50s. Dr. Ewan Cameron, the first director of the Allen Memorial, ran the institute with an iron hand for 20 years. Much of Cameron's research went on in the stables next to the main hospital building. Documents recently released by the CIA reveal what research Cameron proposed. To make patients receptive to repetitive messages, Cameron suggested using chemical agents to break down ongoing patterns of behavior. Chemical agents like LSD. With some patients, Dr. Cameron tried a drastic treatment called depatterning. Massive doses of electroshock, 20 times more intense than the standard shock treatments used today, were administered to patients who were kept sleeping for days. Dr. Cameron thought he could wipe out patients' sick behavior and leave the healthy personality intact. But first, patients were to be so depatterned that some even forgot their toilet training.
Reducing the patient to a sort of animal, vegetable state, from which it's hoped that they would recover in a more healthy state of mind. It didn't work.
To put patients to sleep for up to a month at a time, Dr. Cameron used a combination of depatterning and large doses of drugs. Individual taped messages were repeated to sleeping patients 15 hours a day in an effort to brainwash them back to health.
They kept you asleep for 23 days, and while I was asleep, they were shocking the heck out of me with electric shocks and playing tapes just over and over. I don't know what was on the tapes yet, but we're going to find out what was on the tapes through hypnosis.
The CIA was interested in Dr. Cameron's work on psychic driving because it could give them an idea of where the personality could break or be stressed.
Those of us who were involved with trying to find out something about brainwashing, yes, this is the reason that we were interested in Dr. Cameron's work.
Patients came to the Allen Memorial Institute from all across Canada. Dr. Ewan Cameron, it was said, would give them the best psychiatric care money could buy. But some of the patients had no idea that a lot of their treatment, the LSD, the massive doses of electric shock, the sleep therapy, was highly experimental.
There was no informed consent.
I went through years and years and years of severe depressions. I dream about it. All my waking hours, I think about it. It's eating me up. It really is.
So I don't know if there's necessarily a direct connect between Zbigniew Brzezinski and MKUltra, but certainly he was aware of it, and he attended in one of the central schools that was involved in those programs for government mind control, essentially, if you're not familiar with it. So anyway, Brzezinski picked up this idea. He was a fan of the technocrats. He felt like a managerial controlled society was the best way to go. So like, as you mentioned, in Between Two Ages, he mentions the idea of Skype. He mentions the idea of everybody learning through the computer systems, not going to actual universities, but getting your online degrees. He mentions the fact that people will forget the news from 2 weeks ago, and that the media will do the thinking for the public. And he thinks that's all great. He thinks that's a good thing.
Media doing the thinking for us? Are we there yet?
What political party is the current president a part of?
None. He's affiliated with Trump Inc.
What are the two parts of U.S. Congress?
I don't know.
Can you guys name a U.S. representative in Congress?
Nah.
Nope.
Can you guys name a Lady Gaga song?
Poker Face.
What are the three Kardashian sisters' names?
Khloe, Kim, and Kourtney.
Khloe, Kourtney, and Kim.
The most amazing thing that he mentions in that book in Between Two Ages is the concept of weather warfare and ELF and VLF magnetic manipulation of the atmosphere and the human biosphere through giant ELF towers. So basically weather control is mentioned explicitly in Between Two Ages.
And if I may, I'd like to quote a few of these phenomenally revealing quotes from Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, to give you an idea of what he admits. And remember, this was already published by 1970. Quote, speaking of a future at most only decades away, an experimenter in intelligence control asserted, I foresee a time when we shall have the means and therefore inevitably the temptation to manipulate the behavior and intellectual functioning of all the people through environmental and biochemical manipulation of the brain. That was on page 15. Page 57, he said, in addition, it may be possible and tempting to exploit for strategic political purposes the fruits of research on the brain and on human behavior. That was said by Gordon MacDonald, a geophysicist specializing in problems of warfare. Brzezinski mentioned that he had written the accurately timed, artificially excited electronic strokes could lead to a pattern of oscillations that produce relatively high power levels over certain regions of the Earth. Anybody heard of 5G or HARP? He goes on to say, in this way, one could develop a system that would seriously impair the brain performance of very large populations in selected regions over an extended period. No matter how disturbing the thought of using the environment to manipulate behavior for national advantages to some, the technology permitting such use will very probably develop within the next few decades.
But that's why David Rockefeller chose Zbigniew Brzezinski to play this central role and placed him in this early 70s, right after this book came out, at the head of a new organization called the Trilateral Commission, which would be a kind of higher level committee above the Council on Foreign Relations, which is another Rockefeller creation. So basically we have one of the key deep state agents in the figure of Brzezinski. And as you said, he is in a way the father figure of modern technocracy.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't realize that they were above the CFR. And also, I didn't realize that this had been going on so very long. That's incredible. Because when I think about the control of the elites, I think of them sort of in, I guess, a little more modern time when they're like, oh, the population of the world is getting too crazy. We got to do something to scale this back. And so that they make sure the only people that are around are the ones that are serving them. So grasping it sort of intellectually is one thing. But what is it, in your opinion, that you would say as a description of what would be the fully realized technocratic plan as it would look in our world today?
Yeah. One of the things that I write about a lot is Hollywood and science fiction and propaganda through fiction. So my book, Esoteric Hollywood, covers that in depth. I think it's about 363 pages, 404 footnotes just on this topic. There's a giant section devoted to H.G. Wells. We can't ever overlook H.G. Wells in a discussion of this nature because he's seminal in influencing Hollywood and science fiction from his life on. So we think of The Island of Dr. Moreau. We think of War of the Worlds. We think of The Time Machine, all of these classic H.G. Wells stories. And H.G. Wells consistently put into his novels that he was a technocrat.
So we bred ourselves into castes, some to be our eyes and ears, some to be our muscles and sinews.
Oh, you mean you're hunters?
Yes. Bred to be predators, but bred also to be controlled, you see. My kind. Concentrated on expanding our cerebral abilities.
You control their thoughts.
not just theirs.
He wrote this book in the 30s called The Shape of Things to Come. And in that, he predicted a giant world war. So in other words, he's predicting World War II. And he was only off by 1 year. And he said it would happen in about 10 years. And it would be one of the catalysts to take the world into believing that we need a giant global government. And that's the only way to solve our problems and our disputes. So the giant wars that were concocted, I believe, by powerful banking interests. This is what Dr. Carroll Quigley describes in his magnum opus called Tragedy and Hope. And he's also a technocrat. He's also in the school of Brzezinski, coming out of this same mindset. So H.G. Wells, in his science fiction, gives us the image of what the technocracy will look like. And he even wrote this into, like I said, a fictional story called The Shape of Things to Come, which became a movie that presents basically a Brave New World 1984 scenario. And that's where we're going to go.
Let us now repeat the catechism. Community.
Community.
Identity.
Identity.
Stability.
Stability.
Ford, bless you. I am Mustafa Mond, and I have been assigned to show you certain selected histobunk highlights from the past.
But everything is perfect now, and everything will always be perfect. So what does it matter what things were like when it wasn't perfect?
Excellent point, but quite misguided. Exposing future stability monitors, such as yourself, to the imperfection of the past is, of course, part of the perfection of the present. Centuries ago, in primitive times, before the dawn of civilization, there were things that would be inconceivable to us today. Such things as poverty. Although there was actually land and food in abundance, some starved, because unlike our perfect society, they were unable or unwilling to balance population to consumption. Sometimes too much of one, or too little of the other. The result? Disease. And rather than eradicate the sources of disease, as we have done, the superstitious primitives continued to rely upon a quite useless class of technicians called doctors. Violence, which the ancients actually appear to have enjoyed and reveled in. While we have been perfectly conditioned to want only what we have, and to have only what we want, and are, therefore, always happy, the uncivilized ancients were prey to destructive emotions, such as ambition, hate, and love, which of course always led to violence and senility. While we remain at the prime metabolic age of 35 to ensure a maximum level of useful consumption until painless death from chemostimulation between the ages of 80 and 90, the people of the past lacked the knowledge of how to stay young, even though they apparently valued youth so highly that they actually indulged in superstitious self-mutilation. As seminarians who will one day take your places in synthoculture stability centers, you must face these histobunk facts, unpleasant and even revolting as they sometimes are. Eating the actual flesh of animals and even filthy things from the ground, and sometimes refusing to engage with more than one individual of the opposite sex, and even collecting into groups called families, a pervasively immoral concept of pre-civilized times. Yes, thoroughly disgusting examples of complete sexual perversion, as you can see.
Did the primitive females actually...
Yes. Primitive females gave viviparous birth to young. Oh.
Like animals?
Yes, physiologically, exactly like animals. I understand your reactions. Perhaps we should take a brief soma break. That is truly the perfection of our civilization. Everyone is adjusted. Everyone is perfectly happy, perfectly content.
So if you think about the dystopian stories of Brave New World or 1984, and if you look on YouTube, you can find this old H.G. Wells movie. And it gives you this idea of a completely controlled society where everything is tracked and traced, everything is stored in AI. Basically, AI will run your life and tell you what you can and can't do, when you've used too much toothpaste, when you've not had your daily big pharma pills for the day, you know, when you haven't watched the appropriate amount of porn that the system wants you to watch. So it's all this stuff that they will have regulated and regimented for your daily life. It'll be completely controlled, completely surveilled. And essentially they will decide when people live or die. So it's also a death state. It's also a euthanasia state where there's determinations made on the basis of sustainable development, as it's so called, on how long you'll live before you're taking up too much energy and carbon.
In fact, if we want to head off the worst uncontrollable damages from climate change, that's what we have to do.
Finland and the Netherlands implemented a carbon tax back in 1990, both putting a price tag on each ton of CO2 poison.
So it's a completely tyrannical system. We've seen actually many think tanks have put out videos, have put out white papers, have put out books, countless aspects of propaganda telling us exactly what the situation will be in a technocracy. But we're looking at something like out of a science fiction story, basically.
Which means Black Mirror is not too far off, is he? That guy?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I chose to actually do an analysis of every single episode of Black Mirror.
I saw a really long,
like 20-page essay that I did because, like you said, I saw that, you know, they're really conditioning us through something like Black Mirror, especially.
Yeah, at first I wanted to think of his work as a warning, but as it kept going on, it felt more like pre-programming and sort of like softening us to the idea. It's sort of like those old cop shows in the 80s, I mean, whatever, 90s. I noticed that they were doing things like searching people's houses without warrants. And, you know, they're doing things that don't really fall under what the law is meant to be, so that we become accustomed to it happening in a part of our really real world. And for, sadly, for a lot of people, they're living in these shows. And so it's slowly breaking down. It's slowly conditioning us to accept it.
Yeah, there's all kinds of examples of this. There's old episodes of the Rockford Files that talk about the NSA storing information on every American. That was back in like the late 70s, early 80s.
Well, this explains the air conditioning.
Must be a relay station.
The smells of powerful people and one hell of an invasion of personal privacy.
You're in the private information market. Personal secrets for sale. You can stomp somebody into the ground using computer technology as a club. How am I doing?
To my knowledge, none of this is illegal.
Well, it sure as hell ought to be.
It appears to be that Mr. McGregor and the two men who arrested with him were attempting to set up a secret system of computers which would carry the personal records of some 200 million Americans.
It's one thing for our government to have us categorized and computerized, but why does a company install a secret underground computer center right in the middle of one of the world's largest cities? Why indeed?
So again, a big part of what I do is research fiction and movies and pull out these presaging, predicting elements that really try to condition us, like you said. And certainly one of the greatest attempts at conditioning that Hollywood has put forward is technocracy. They really want us to go into accepting transhumanism, which was coined by the Huxleys. So when you read Brave New World or when you see that kind of a dystopian scenario, you're not just looking at a guy who wants to warn everybody. I mean, Aldous Huxley was self-consciously a part of this globalist elite, very open about it. And the book is a plan. It's a game plan. In fact, if you read the introduction of Brave New World, he says that this is the culmination of all the revolutions, all the way back to the French Revolution. So there's only one strand of ideology here, and technocracy and transhumanism sums it up.
Well, I was glad that you mentioned that earlier about the carbon aspect of this, because it seems to me that's the United Nations sort of linchpin. Yep. And how they'll call for complete control. And of course, it will be to save the planet. And it seems like maybe they grabbed hold of Brzezinski because he already had the technocracy piece. But as it ties into the United Nations, it just seems so flawless. So What United Nations agenda goals that you're aware of pair well with technocracy to make it such a good fit, or which came first? I mean, did they just adopt the roles of the technocracy model into the UN, or do you know?
It's all synonymous because you get UNESCO from the Huxleys as well. So the United Nations attempt to kind of co-opt and alter culture. This is straight out of the mind of the Huxleys. It's all the same people. I mean, it's the same power structure, the Royal Society that created the Council on Foreign Relations in the U.S., which is modeled on the U.K. roundtables. The roundtables come from Rothschild and Cecil Rhodes back to the period when they were trying to set up the best way of managing the British Empire. So what we got in the U.S. is basically the same kind of model. Control the world through all areas of life. Again, it's a total biosphere alteration and control. So it's not just like making sure that everything about you is tracked and traced and they know everything you've done. It's also a matter of manipulating and altering life itself. So when you talk about carbon taxing or controlling carbon, this is really just an aspect of population control, which is central to this whole plan. Life is carbon. We're carbon-based life forms. So when they talk about taxing carbon, really they just mean euthanasia. They just mean making sure that most of the population is dead. Georgia Guidestones keep the population down to 500 million. That's the root of it. It all centers around this. It's all based around the Luciferian aspect of Darwinism. It's not that one necessarily preceded the other. They all kind of go hand in hand, because the same guys that formulated technocracy believed that as a result, there's only one way to govern men, and thus it follows in their mind that it should be global government.
So true. And I'm hoping that the type of people that watch my show are not going to be thinking this way and are already questioning the actions of the UN, but the way that they make it sound, of course, sounds very appealing. You know, we're going to make sure that we save the environment. We're going to make sure that everyone has fair treatment. I mean, it sounds great, you know, but I guess what I would love to hear your sort of slant on is, what facts would you point to people to warn against the UN agendas, to those who see it's just a good thing? You know, we're just trying to save the earth and that sort of thing.
Well, the two most obvious things that come to mind is everyone could just look up the Club of Rome document, the first global revolution, that they created the notion of pollution as a way to convince the world that mankind's problems are the result of too many people. So this is admitted in the document. It's completely fabricated. Not to say that there's not periods or times when pollution can be a problem, certainly, but that's not the root of man's problems. This is, again, part of their depopulation agenda. And if you read something like David Rockefeller's memoirs, or if you read the authorized biography of the Rockefellers by Collier and Horowitz, they will discuss depopulation at length. So it's very open about it. It's not a mystery. Bill Gates, you know, he's involved in the same type of stuff. He talks about it openly in TED Talks.
Through vaccines.
Yeah. And then the other thing,
I think he slipped up on that one. What do you think? I mean, it almost seemed like an error on his part.
They also like to throw it in people's faces at times too. So it could be either one. But another way to see this is that if you look at what the UN promotes in terms of UNESCO, which is a part of its propaganda arm, the ideas of, you know, the transgenderism and basically messing up kids psychosexually. This is something that the UN promotes globally. So there are two easy examples right away that let you know that the UN is not here to fix humanity. They're here to technocratically control it and enact a big scale euthanasia operation.
Yes, sad but true. So we already covered what my next question was going to be, about how you do agree that the carbon tax will be a major factor in this plan. I mean, do you have any off the cuff? I mean, you're not exactly a scientist, but you study so much, you know more than what most scientists know, because they're reading all the bunk science.
Great. Senator Ranker has a question.
So let me rattle off a couple of peer-reviewed scientific facts that I have before me, and I would like your opinion on those. I understand that last November was the globe's 333rd month of above average global temperatures. To put that in perspective, that would mean that if you are 27 years old today, you have never experienced a month with a global temperature below the average.
You have a question, Senator Ranker?
Sure. Because what you just put out in your slide goes contrary to the data that I have before me. So I'm just curious if what you're basing your metadata on, where your samples are taken from, and then also what's your opinion of the data that I have before me, which seems contrary to what you're putting forward.
And what I just said a moment ago was that I'm showing you the original data, and what you're looking at is the data that has been tampered with by NOAA and by NASA, and I could show you curves of what that data looked like in 1936, what it looked like in 1980, what it looked like in 1990 and 2000, and the temperatures, the high temperatures in the 1930s, get cooler every year. They put out a new issue, and the temperatures that are in the 2000 plus get warmer because they have frankly tampered with the data. That's the difference between what you're looking at and what I'm looking at. Mine is the original data.
One quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
So National Science Foundation, NASA, and NOAA have manipulated the data.
Yes, that's true. I'm not saying that they have done something which is scurrilous and evil. What I'm saying simply is something that everybody will agree on, and that is that they have what they call adjusted the data. And if you look at how they have adjusted it, the 1930s always get lower because of the adjustments they made from the original data, and the 2000 plus always get warmer. That's the case. And I can show you data that will indicate that if you like.
Thank you.
Do you have any thing that you've come across that proves that's bunk, that their theories about carbon being the problem is not actually true?
Well, there have been plenty of good documentaries that discuss this, kind of critiquing and exposing global warming as a propaganda thing. I mean, one thing that comes to mind that's really easy to debunk it is the fact that it bears all the marks of a PR campaign. So, for example, in the 80s when I was a kid, it was called Global Warming. And it was all about how we were going to be cooked by a certain year. So when you look at the old claims of when we were all going to be microwaved by the sun and baked and turned into bacon, the dates are all wrong. All of their predictions of doom and cataclysm have been completely wrong. And then we noticed into the late 90s and early 2000s, it started to take on a new PR campaign name known as climate change. So because they couldn't convince everybody that we were all going to be cooked by a certain year, it just became, when there's a storm, when there's a tsunami, this is just evidence. So basically anything and everything is evidence and proof of this amorphous thing, climate change. And then when you realize that the IPCC scientists, their emails got leaked and they were scamming people and saying, let's fudge the data, you start to realize that this is a giant scam. And it really is just to, again, promote the exact same agenda. So like I said, in my lecture series, I go through a whole bunch of the globalist books. I mean, one of the key ones is Jacques Attali in his book, The Brief History of the Future. And he's kind of like the Brzezinski or the Kissinger of France. He mentors most of France's recent presidents. So he kind of is the shadow government guy in France, and he's on board with all the same guys that run our globalist shadow government. And he says in that book that the carbon tax is central to it, and really it's all about just controlling population again. So it's a tax on life, and again, just an extension of euthanasia.
Absolutely. And
because they literally want to be able to say, like, at what point you need to die because you're using too much energy. And he makes that explicit statement in the book multiple times.
Which is where our beliefs differ a little bit, I think, maybe, because, I mean, that's what I believe the mark or the, you know, when we do start implementing their technology into our body, seems to me they're going to really want to have an off switch for us embedded into that. And that would make it a lot more easy for them to pull the plug on those who are not lining up and taking orders and whatnot.
Yeah, well, certainly I would say that the idea of microchipping everyone is a satanically inspired plan. I just don't think that that's what John is referring to when he mentions the number 666. But we would definitely agree on the fact that the person or spirit behind these plans is definitely Satan. So it's absolutely satanic.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that's kind of hard about talking about these sorts of things, and I'm sure you have few people you can relate with in the world, because it really narrows down how many people even have a clue of what's going on. And when you do start trying to tell them these things, the cognitive dissonance, it's just too much. You know, people sort of, I believe, impose their own goodness, their own way of seeing what they would do in a situation onto the people that run Absolutely. Things. And it just doesn't add up, and they'll never understand, never, but I mean, all things are being revealed now. One thing that's a bummer about this in some ways is when people do seem to want to know, and they are in their gut. I mean, and I believe we're spoken to through our conscience, and that is a part of God within us. And when we're feeling something's not right, and then you start telling them what it's really about, and they're just like, oh, you know, what's the point of going on? Like, we're never going to beat them. And so I guess that's what I want to segue into, like, do you have any suggestions of how people can effectively oppose this on a local level? I mean, I know some people have stood up against the Agenda 21 in their local community, and it's difficult because they've got people that are trained to sniff out the ones that are not going along with it and to ostracize them. And I don't know I had a targeted individual piece recently, and that happens to these people. But I'm all about solutions if we can, you know. Do you have any practical solutions about how people can effectively oppose this on their local level in their own towns?
Yeah, well, if it starts with changing on an individual level, it starts with, in my view, I'm an Orthodox Christian, so I believe Orthodox Christianity is the best way to be legitimately linked into being connected to God. It's not to say that I don't appreciate or learn from other groups that are Christian, but that's what I would say is number one. That's a big part of my channel, is devoted to that theological tradition. But I would say on another sense, a personal level, you know, education is number one, learning these things, trying to ferret out the true from the false. It also helps to be grounded in basic logic, so you know how to sniff out fallacies, bad argumentations, and lies, because a lot of what we get in the media is propaganda. So it's really helpful to be able to have discernment to know when something's true and when something's false. So basic logic and these kinds of things, that's what I discuss a lot at my site. I certainly support all the ideas of not giving your money to any globalist entities, not supporting the big box stores, support local stuff, support organic stuff. Those are all crucial, because when you go to these big box stores and when you support big studios, these kinds of things with your movie tickets, you're really just feeding into that system. They're sucking away your time and your money and your energy.
And you're being programmed by their agenda.
And you're being programmed, and your children are being programmed, especially by these big entities. So that's all number one. So I mean, I'm not saying you can't be politically active, but I think that in my view, the personal theological transformation comes first. And then that kind of flows out into your family and your friends.
Absolutely.
Then politics will change down the road, but not politics is not first.
And you're not going to learn discernment, the gift of discernment, through your community course or through your elementary school or high school or college. It's going to give you the opposite of that. So discernment is so key. Right. One way that I see people caught up in the dialectic of the right versus left paradigm. I mean, that's huge. And it's a huge way that they're dividing us and getting us pointing our fingers at each other rather than who controlled the whole system, who created the whole system. And a lot of people would say, oh, well, Trump is against the UN and, you know, he's got all these big plans. I mean, but it seems obvious to me that this is beyond bipartisan politics. This is both sides moving towards it. Do you see Trump being able to effectively stand against this one?
Not really, just because, you know, if we read somebody like Carol Quigley, the office of the presidency, it has a lot of power in the sense of being a focal point of people's attention, but in actually changing things, or, you know, it doesn't do a whole lot. So really what we've seen with Trump is just kind of, a lot of putting the same neocons into power that he was supposed to drain from the swamp. That's the worst part of it. But at the same time, he's also done some good things. He's shaken things up. He's challenged the PC narrative and all that, which is good. So, but I don't put a whole lot of hope in just some white knight savior like Trump. No, it's going to take, you know, a large scale alteration of how people view their own lives, and, you know, a kind of revival in a way. I don't want to sound too cheeseball, but I mean, that's kind of what's necessary. It's not going to be Trump. It's not going to be some Neo from the Matrix coming and saving us. It's going to be individuals changing and returning to God, basically.
Amen. And having the boundaries to say, you know, we're not crossing that line. Sorry. No, yeah. That's the line I'm not ever going to have crossed. And these vaccines, 89 vaccines they're having put into children now, or they come take your kids if you don't do what they want. All you got to do is look at the sky and see the nanoparticulates that are coming out there. It seems every system is putting metal into us. And I can't help but think that plays into the electromagnetic fields that they're tampering with, mm-hmm. and the 5G and all that. So, I mean, they definitely got a big plan. We can't trust one side or the other. It's all about that discernment you talked about. But another thing that I think is really interesting about the sort of dismantling of all semblance of trust and order of the political world, I think that's a part of the plan too, because what is technocracy, but it's taking it away from the political side and saying, we need to trust the scientists, right?
The experts, yeah.
They're going to say, you know, politics is broken. It's broken on purpose. They broke it. They created it to be broken, right? Yes.
Yeah, that's part of the tactics of bringing in the technocracy is absolutely to reveal your hand, absolutely to break down the existing structures. So the globalists are not, strictly speaking, classical Marxists, but they do share a lot of similarities to Marxism. They're actually a combination between Marxist and capitalist, believe it or not. That's really the globalist plan. It's Fabian socialism is a technocratic model for slowly implementing this over a long period of time. And one of the things that Marxism is good for is wrecking and destroying everything that came before. So there's this continual critique and deconstruction and demolition of everything that came before. And that's central to what the globalists do. So absolutely, you're absolutely right. And in order to install a new system, you have to really convince everybody that that they need a new system, that the old one's broken, it didn't work, it was already rigged to begin with. So let's just let the managerial experts control everything. And that's actually a central chapter in Carol Quigley's giant treatise on the New World Order from their side. He's writing that book as one of the proponents of it. And he actually says that the old systems will have to break down because we'll be run by experts and they know what they're doing. And we just have to listen to what they say. And if they say that you need to die when you're 30, then we have to do it. If they say that we have to accept abortion because of sustainable development in terms of population control, we have to do it. They say that your kids can be 60 different genders, we have to do it. They say you have to take 60 different vaccines by the age of 3, you have to do it. Yeah,
because they're the experts and they know better.
Yeah, but why are they the experts? Because they said so. I mean, it's like very circular here, but.
Well, that's sort of what became this really big flag for me about Elon Musk. I know people in my own personal circle that literally worship the guy. They think he can do no wrong. I mean, I'm familiar with these people who are handed businesses on a silver platter. And mm-hmm. as long as they go along with what the elites that are pulling their strings say, they can be the big, you know, admired CEO guy that started all this in his mom's garage or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And I felt like that was him from the beginning, but I couldn't really prove it. And I'm finding some information to back that up. But it's just amazing to me. And it's fun to be able to talk to you because you have so many areas of expertise that tie all this together. But it's amazing to me how they so effectively brand him as being cautious, because you see, he's this concerned fellow human being, which is why they gave him an electric car company, a solar panel company, and, you know, all these companies that, you know, reflect his values for the planet. And mm-hmm. he keeps saying he's leery of technology. They keep playing that worn out clip of him saying, oh, don't unleash the demon with AI.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence. I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon. You know, all those stories where there's the guy with the pentagram and the holy water, and he's like, yeah, you sure you can control the demon? Didn't work out.
They just believe he's careful, even though his solution is a brain mesh interface.
That's what I was going to say, is that he says all this, and a lot of people think, oh, he's like a champion of something, like human rights or something. But then, yeah, he comes on and says, oh, but here's a better way to do it where, you know, this will be the good version of transhumanism, wink, wink.
But it's just, it's incredible that people just, they believe him, and that we don't anymore even look at what the Bible would call the fruit of what a person is. Mm-hmm. We just believe what the labels interpretation of that person are, regardless of what they're actually doing.
And that's the power of the media and propaganda. And that's exactly what Brzezinski said it would do.
just about to say, they must be very, very thrilled with the effectiveness of their control of the media, news, and Hollywood, and how well it has worked to program us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Edward Bernays, of course, you know, the father of propaganda, he said that Hollywood was the greatest tool the world's ever seen for propaganda. So Hollywood, they've known for a long time, back in his day, right, that it was the great tool for manipulating people and basically, in a way, inducting them. It's almost like black magic. It's a way to voodoo spell everybody with giving them a worldview, and they don't even realize it. So you're actually being given your own lenses by which you read the world through movies and fiction, and you don't even realize it until, hopefully, you know, you're older, you start picking up on things that don't make sense and contradictions, and you start to, you know, hopefully become more wise in the way that you view the world. But for most people, unfortunately, yeah, they're very easily programmed. They react emotionally. And that's why movies are very good at pulling the heartstrings and getting us to believe things that we normally wouldn't believe, because we identify with the characters in the film.
It just still kind of blows my mind. And they know how to pull our strings. They know how to literally rewire our thinking, because mm-hmm. most people are going along thinking, hey, yeah, I mean, I'm the creator of my own thought. They'll argue with you about the points they saw on Fox News, and they literally think it's their own ideas. It's wild. It's pretty wild. But anyway, I've taken too much of your time on this topic already. I really appreciate your time tonight. It's such a pleasure to get your insight on these little known topics. So thank you for your work in exposing these deceptions. And again, thanks for joining us today. I hope you can come back again soon.
Well, thank you.
To check out Jay's work, please visit jaysanalysis.com for his insightful and in-depth analysis on Hollywood, geopolitics, espionage, philosophy, and more. Hello, family. It's Miss Dana Ashley. I just wanted to give a little intro video to let you know what this video is all about. As I'm digging deep to... Don't do that, Roscoe. Leave the screen door alone. No. Stay. He wants to be with me. Stay. Take two. Okay. Stop it. Roscoe. Stop. So much for peace and quiet on the porch. Hello, family.